This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Good morning. It's Thursday, June the 24th, 2021. Happy Saint Jean Baptiste Day. Welcome to Now with Dave Brown, coming to you on AMI Audio and AMI TV. I'm Dave Brown. Let's hit the horns and go. The horns got me. That's the first time the horns have gotten me. When you mess with the bull, sometimes you get the horns. Coming up on the show today, CNIB President and CEO John Rafferty discusses how accessible payment terminals may be coming soon to a store near you. Producer Don Dickinson previews The Guardian this week with an article about the rise in demand for garden designers and outdoor living. Food and drink columnist Jenny Bovard chats about some must-have cocktails and icy beverages you can enjoy this hot summer. In the second hour of the show, Stephen Scott from Double Tap Canada describes AirFly Pro, a new wireless headphone adapter for Apple's AirPods. And Karen McGee gives you her central regional report, including a story about a new little library in Sudbury that is sharing diverse voices and perspectives. But let's begin the show by sharing our top story of the day. A First Nation in southern Saskatchewan is set to hold a news conference later this morning about what it calls the horrific and shocking discovery of hundreds of unmarked graves at a site of the former residential school. The Cowessess First Nation says the number of unmarked graves from the former Maryvale Indian Residential School will be the most substantial to date found in Canada. Lori Paris has more.
Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe says on Twitter that all of the province mourns for those who were discovered buried in unmarked graves near the former residential school site about 160 kilometers east of Regina, adding he understands many of the remains are those of children. He says, sadly, as the search for graves continues across the province, other Saskatchewan First Nations will experience the same shock and despair. Moe says he has spoken with Cowessess Chief Cadmus Delorme and Chief Bobby Cameron of the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations to offer the full support of the provincial government as they deal with the tragic discovery. Lori Paris, The Canadian Press.
In a related story, the Alberta government is contributing $8 million in grants to assist First Nations and Métis communities to locate the remains and honour the memories of residential school victims. Premier Jason Kenney says there is a moral obligation to find these remains. Chief Billy Morin of the Innoc Cree First Nation agrees.
This is where the most residential schools were provincially. And so that's a great start. That's a great action. That's a great reconciliation.
Grant applications allow for a maximum of $150,000 per group. It can be used to search for unmarked graves, to gather information and oral histories about the tragic legacy, or pay for commemorative work, such as grave markers or memorials. Describing it as a positive step forward, the BC Regional Chief for the Assembly of First Nations says an agreement over the sharing of residential school records will help Indigenous communities looking for answers about their loved ones. The Sisters of St. Anne and the Royal BC Museum announced the deal yesterday. Chief Terry Teague is calling for a quick release, full transparency, and no obstacles to access the First Nation communities. And of course, the impact of the story is spilling into Parliament as well. How federal leaders will spend Canada Day is a question hanging over Parliament Hill, where the discovery of the unmarked graves of 250 children in British Columbia has the country grappling with a racist history. Stephanie Taylor explains.
I'm very proud to be Canadian, and I know most people are as well.
Conservative leader Erin O'Toole says he can't stay silent when people are trying to cancel Canada Day. Some cities are skipping the usual fireworks and flag waving after the discovery in Kamloops.
There have been atrocities committed on this land.
Indigenous Services Minister Mark Miller says he has mixed feelings about Canada Day. He says July 1st should be a time of reflection on what Canada is and what it has done. Stephanie Taylor, The Canadian Press, Ottawa.
And while we're in Ottawa, may as well take a look at one more political story. The House of Commons has risen for the summer, but the Senate will extend its hours to consider some outstanding bills. Roger Ward has more.
The upper chamber was set to wrap up yesterday, but senators agreed last evening to sit until the late hours of next Monday and Tuesday. Committees have already conducted pre-studies of two of four bills, but it'll take unanimous agreement to fast-track the two other Liberal bills without bringing them before committees. Those bills are C-6, a bill to ban therapy aimed at altering a person's sexual orientation or gender identity, and C-10, a controversial bill to regulate online streaming giants. Roger Ward, The Canadian Press.
Let's get to our daily polls. At AMI Audio is where you find us on Twitter. Accessible Media Inc. is where you find us on Facebook. On yesterday, we asked you, do you send your devices to be repaired? 0% of you said always. 0% of you said frequently. 85% of you said sometimes. And 15% of you said never. Now, this daily poll question for today at AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook, it's going to relate to Jenny Bovard's topic, our food and drink columnist, who's going to be talking about summertime beverages. So I'm going to give you a list here. I'm asking you, what is the best summertime drink? If your favorite is not listed, please write in. And feel free to write in cocktails or mocktails as well. So I didn't include any alcoholic beverages on the public-facing Twitter forum, but now on the public-facing national TV show, you know, if somebody wants to say beer or Rattler, you know, feel free to say beer or Rattler. Or if you like a mocktail or a mojito, you can say that too. But the options that I have for you are iced tea, iced coffee, lemonade, and water. Keeping it simple, some folks love themselves an icy glass of water. So it could be water. Let's bring in Sam Robinson. Sam, what is your favorite summertime cocktail?
Well, I think my ideology here is going to be around, I don't want to be able to not see through the drink. I want a good, clear, fresh drink.
Okay.
I like a good Rattler. Actually, I'm so on board with the last 2 or 3 years where we've seen this huge rise of like gin cocktail, vodka cocktail stuff.
Mm-hmm. No law when you're drinking the Claw.
The White Claw has been getting me recently too. So White Claw is like a seltzer and grain alcohol, and they, you know, slightly flavor it like you would anything. It doesn't really matter. What really matters is that you've got like a refreshing beverage. Also, do not discount low alcohol beer. It is so good to be refreshed and to not get very drunk during a day.
Mm-hmm. Darn tootin'. I like that overall philosophy. That's good. Sam, in terms of some of these listed, though, just to bounce back here, iced
lemonade.
Tea, iced coffee, lemonade.
I used to, when I was a teenager, I could go through a liter of lemonade in a day easily.
Yeah, when I was a kid, Seal Test used to sell lemonade in these
yes.
big green, like 2 liter containers.
Yeah,
and I could crush
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'd go
day,
right
no
to the
problem.
Fridge.
Let's bring in Nazreen Abdelmajid. Nazreen, what's your favorite summertime drink?
Cocktails when I'm at home because I make my own. And ice cap. Simple ice cap. Basic.
Simple Tim's ice cap. So tell us
more about
these mocktails that you make at home.
Ooh, so I researched them online and I try to make my own because it's so delicious. I make fruity flavors.
Mm. Right on.
So I add sparkling water, 7-Up with frozen fruits and sugar. Mix it up. There's a bunch of more flavors and
do
everything.
Do you deliver?
But it's so good.
Will you deliver to the studio, please?
We're thirsty.
It is
really hot in here today. The air conditioning's not working.
It sounds good, right? It's icy, and you could eat the fruits while you're drinking. So it's
yeah,
really good.
That's a good point, too. I like that. When you can add some nums into the mix, it's like when you get a Bloody Mary or a what's the one people like with the clam juice?
Caesar,
yeah. I don't like Caesars. Anyway, sorry, we're digressing here. Let's bring in Mike Ross. Mike Ross, what's your favorite summertime beverage?
I'm with Sam. We've become partial to the White Claw. Sort of discovered that, if you will, about a month ago and have enjoyed those a lot. But I'm also just like a good old-time iced tea guy.
Yeah.
I love a good iced tea. I think back to when I was a kid, my grandmother would make, she'd buy the Lipton iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was just such great childhood memories of Lipton iced tea and down in that.
Mike, do you get adventurous at all with the fruit flavor in your iced tea? I know lemon is kind of the standard, right?
Yeah, I'm a lemon.
Bit of raspberry.
Yeah.
I love me peach. Oh my gosh.
That's
peach
not bad.
Tea.
The peach Ooh. Snapple. I don't know if you've had that.
Peach Snapple,
really
Mike.
Stepping up the game. But I tell you what, the one drink that I came up with years and years and years ago, and it used to get me in trouble, it was perfect for barbecuing, and it was watermelon drink mix that you could buy at like M&M or Giant Tiger and Blue Curacao. Into the watermelon. And I would make, like, I had these plastic glasses that were probably, like, I don't know, like 10, 12 inches high. And I would go through like two or three of those while making dinner. Like, whoa. Whoa.
Yeah.
I got some on your shirt.
I probably should not have been using a barbecue by the third drink, but I was. And, you know, I live to tell the tale.
Oh, my gosh. Summertime vibes. Can everybody feel the summertime vibes? I'm like, yeah. I'm getting that palpable. Vibe out here today. It's totally palpable. Thank you for that, Mike. Get Thank it. You, Sam. Thank you, Nazreen. At AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. Maybe social media is not your thing. Send us an email, feedback@AMI.ca, or leave us a voicemail, 1-866-509-4545. Let's go back to Nazreen Abdel-Majid. She has your national weather update.
Thanks, Dave. Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. St. John's, drizzle, then clearing, fog patches dissipating, high of 22, except the temperature falling to 16. Halifax, mainly sunny, fog patches dissipating with a high of 24, except a high of 17 along parts of the coast. In Montreal, mainly sunny, high of 29 and a humidex of 31. Ottawa, mix of sun and clouds, then clearing with a high of 27 and a humidex of 28. In Toronto, sunny, high of 27 and a humidex of 29. In Thunder Bay, mix of sun and clouds becoming sunny with a high of 27 and a humidex of 30. In Winnipeg, mainly sunny, high of 28 and a humidex of 29. Saskatoon, mainly cloudy, then clearing with a high of 25. In Calgary, mainly cloudy with a 60% chance of showers. There's a risk of a thunderstorm, high of 20. In Edmonton, clearing, high of 25 and a humidex of 26. Yellowknife, sunny, mix of sun and clouds with a chance of showers. There's a risk of thunderstorm and a high of 25 and a humidex of 26. In Vancouver, a mix of sun and clouds, high of 23 and a humidex of 28. And in Victoria, mix of sun and clouds with a high of 23 and a humidex of 27. And that was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Thank you very much, Nazreen. Coming up next, CNIB President and CEO John Rafferty discusses how accessible payment terminals may be coming soon to a store near you. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's talk about cash money. As you've heard me say before, I tend to be something of a cash operation. You'll still find yours truly at artifacts known as ATM machines. But let's be clear. Paying for goods and services is rapidly becoming a distinctly digital experience. You may find yourself tapping or swiping, inserting, pinning, or scanning any number of cards or even your phone. Oh, sure, it's convenient, but it sure as heck lacks accessibility for members of the blind and low vision community. And there are solutions in the works to make electronic payments more accessible. We're beyond pleased to welcome CNIB President and CEO John Rafferty to the program to discuss this further. Hey, good morning, John. Thank you so much for making time to be with us today. We're so appreciative.
Good morning, Dave.
So the subject of accessible payment terminals is an important one. How did it come to your attention?
I think it came to my attention when they first created a payment terminal, I think. However long that ago that was. But it's been an ongoing issue with the community. It comes up time and time again. It's in many ways become less accessible as technology has grown as opposed to more accessible. So we're thrilled to be kind of on the verge of changing the tide. We haven't solved it, but we're certainly making some really good steps forward now.
We'll talk about the solutions in just a moment, but I know one of the issues that I deal with when it comes to payment terminals as someone who's legally blind is that the fonts are teensy tiny and pretty much unreadable. But what are some of the accessibility issues that members of the community have been mentioning to you and CNIB colleagues?
Yeah, I think that font size, the contrast issues, as well as just the size on screens, the touch button touchpads and no buttons on them is an issue, and probably the one that is comes up most often is the lack of consistency of the layout of and the sequence of what you have to do and where the buttons are located and whether the first one says checking or the second one or when it's going to ask you if you want to leave a tip or not. So the consistency in the process and the layout and design is also a huge accessibility barrier.
Well, the CNIB has been working with a leader in payment technology, Moneris, to develop more accessible terminals. How did that relationship come about?
Well, it began in a structured way at the beginning of 2018. In January 2018, we having been frustrated in trying to deal with this issue for many years, we called a summit and invited large retailers, all the payment processors, Canadian banks, and had a good attendance for kind of a four-hour summit around accessibility. I think that people came and they listened. They were made aware through a number of very good videos that were produced in order to kind of demonstrate the barriers and what they mean. And then for months afterwards, we heard nothing. So it started the process and until we were able to reach out to the CEO of Moneris, Angela Brown. I sat down with her. We mapped out a plan. She wasn't sure how or whether it could be how it would be solved or whether it could be solved. And we were thrilled. We told her that, you know, Moneris is the leader in payment transactions in Canada. It's a Canadian organization. Most of the others are not Canadian owned and operated. And there's no better place to start a solution than with the number one in the business.
I know the answer to this is probably a bit self-evident, but I always like exploring it. What's the importance of collaborating with a leader in the industry like Moneris in an endeavor like this?
Well, yeah, I mean, the answer is the obvious one, Dave. When a leader leads, others follow. It creates profile. It puts it on the map a lot more than if a very small player was doing it. It can't be ignored by others. Moneris doing this, it tells everyone else that they're going to have to get in the game or they're going to fall behind.
Now, we talked about some of the common issues that folks have run into. What are some of the changes and upgrades at these terminals that customers could expect?
So just for you, Dave, the fonts are bigger.
Hey.
And the contrast is better. So that's kind of a standard that's there, and that's kind of the number one component of the design. They have a keypad. When a payment terminal is handed to someone by holding the 5 button down when it's passed to you, I think it's for like 1 second or 2 seconds, it enables voice. So the machine will enable voice. It will allow you to invert the text so that it will go from a black font on a white background to a white font on a black background, which is very useful for certain members in the community. Or you can complete the whole transaction in an audio way. It'll confirm amounts. It will ask you whether you want to leave a tip. It will confirm all of the instructions in an audio way.
Very, very cool. Nice to see that development coming down the pipeline. Now, you had a chance to speak at the Payments Canada Summit last month. What message did you share? And conversely, what were some of your own takeaways from being part of such an event?
So, obviously, we shared a lot of what we've just talked about, kind of why, where did it come from. I think the net extra piece that I shared there was conversations that I've had with those who've been testing this terminal from the community as we've been kind of managing Moneris through this. And I've asked everyone a question. If you're standing on a street and you need to go to a drugstore, and there's one on the same side of the road you're on, and there's one across the street, you know that the one across the street has an accessible payment terminal. Will you cross the road and shop there? And everyone, to a person, says yes. And so the message at the payment terminal is not just that this is the right thing to do and it should be done and everyone should have an inclusive experience, but it's going to be good for business. There's 1.5 million Canadians who are blind or partially sighted and struggle on a daily basis with payment terminals. If one brand of store has it and another doesn't, you yourself will probably choose the one that has the accessible payment terminals. So those who don't do this are going to fall behind economically, was the kind of the net extra message that I had over and above all of the things we've talked about as to why this should be done from an accessibility standpoint.
Mm. Do you have a sense of when we might see some of these accessible payment terminals popping up?
So they should be starting to pop up kind of early to mid-July is our expectation. There should be tens of thousands of them in situ before the end of the summer. And then Mineris will continue to roll that out. So all of their net new terminals will have all of these features built in. A number of terminals that are already in market will get a software upgrade that will enable them to do this kind of instantly. So we're expecting, you know, close to 100,000 accessible terminals by the end of the summer.
Really great to hear that. Now, John, it's been a little while since you and I have had a chance to catch up, so I want to shift gears as we're wrapping up the interview. I want to check in to see how you and your colleagues have been holding up over the last couple months and the year with the pandemic. I know it's been a difficult time for many, but I'm curious what lessons may have been learned within the last year for the CNIB and whether it's been an opportunity to develop new best practices that can be applied long after the pandemic has subsided.
Well, first of all, thanks for asking. It's been a journey for all of us, and we've all had our challenges over the last 16 months, but we've also had some successes. I think we're doing well. We've learned an awful lot over the last year. And a lot of which is going to be here to stay. You know, we reach more Canadians who are blind or partially sighted with virtual programs now than we ever have. We've seen increases in all demographics, including our seniors in terms of participation in virtual programmings, and also where people are getting connected from. You know, the idea that you need to be able to find one of our 56 locations, which is, you know, is a fair few locations, but there are hundreds and hundreds of communities across the country, and we now have participants in places that we never had before. So that's here to stay. You know, I think that we're coming out of the organization, coming out of the pandemic as a stronger organization, which is great. We are looking forward to reopening those physical sites for in-person programming in the future, but we're not going to take away what we've been doing virtually because it really has made a profound difference.
John, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for making time to be with us this morning. We're so grateful.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dave, anytime.
That's John Rafferty, the president and CEO of the CNIB. This is Now with Dave Brown. We'll be back after a very short break. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Let's get a preview of The Guardian this week. Of course, you can catch the entire show Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio and hear readings from the pages of The Guardian newspaper. Producer Don Dickinson joins us now to tell you about a few of this week's articles. Hey, good morning, Don.
Hi, Dave. How are you? I'm sorry to hear about the air conditioning, Dave.
Well, you know, we live. It's summertime. There's always cold water. We can make it work no matter how we slice it. Hey, Don, let's jump right into business here and looking at the British business. The former Tory Chancellor Ken Clark has dismissed Boris Johnson's proposal for a £200 million royal yacht as a ridiculous item in these tight budget pandemic times. So, what sentiment is Clark expressing regarding the new royal yacht?
Well, you know, these kind of things always bring up a lot of emotion, right? Especially at times where things are tight, like in the pandemic. But basically, Lord Clark is saying that this vanity project is just ridiculous. And he said there's no free money despite public finances being very, very stretched by the pandemic. He said that this kind of an expense at this time, £200 million, is just not feasible. We have no money for this kind of thing, he says to BBC Radio's 4. He described the item as a complete waste of time and silly populist nonsense.
So, Don, beyond the people who would get to ride in the yacht, like the royal family and their guests, for example, are there others who think the new ship is a good idea?
Yeah, well, when you get past the initial, you know, shock of the £200 million and the health secretary, Matt Hancock, says that, you know, you have to think about this ship as an investment. It's an investment that you can get in from the rest of the world by showing the best of Britain in harbors all around the world. And the other thing he points out is it's not just a vanity product for project for the royal family. You know, it's used extensively for trade missions.
Okay, I can start to understand maybe a little bit on the trade mission side of things. That said, $200 million yacht, or 200 million pound yacht. I mean, that's a sizable yacht. You could park a yacht in a yacht that size. What's the final decision, and where's the money coming from to build it?
Well, it was initially, Downing Street was indicating that the royal yacht would be paid for out of the defense budget. Recently, Number 10 insisted that this is a ship that will promote U.S. trade extensively and drive investment back into the country. We so expect any costs to be absorbed by the Ministry of Defense. However, having said that, this morning there was an update to that, and it turns out that Downing Street has backed down from insisting that the Ministry of Defense foot the whole bill for the new Royal Yacht Britannia. And now they're indicating that they would, the Ministry of Defense would initially only pay for the procurement process and that the rest of the cost for the yacht would be allocated elsewhere. However, they have not exactly said where elsewhere is, Dave.
Ultimately, it's taxpayers' money. Like, let's be clear. Yeah. Ultimately, it's taxpayers' money. Ultimately, the taxpayers are paying for the yacht. And Don, although I can definitely understand this concept of like, yeah, it's part of trade missions. It's part of this. It's part of that. As a government that is a more conservative government, Boris Johnson's government, you could never pitch an austerity program ever again. You could never cut a single dollar from a school or a hospital or anything else in that country if you buy the royal family a 200 million pound yacht. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. I'm one of these people who oftentimes get engaged in these sports stadiums conversations, right? Oh, should the government pay for sports stadiums? Absolutely not. It's a private business. They should build their own stupid sports stadiums. And in this situation, this is even more preposterous. Listen, I'm willing to give the royal family a nice boat, not a 200 million pound boat.
You want them to have a, like a 30-foot grew or something, right?
Yeah, they can have themselves a nice simple 40-footer. You know, they can have a couple butlers on board and do their thing. But yeah, it's to me like there's no way you can ever win the public perception battle on this one. There's no way you can ever win the public perception battle.
No, that's true, Dave. The optics are pretty bad in times like these. You know, pandemic times. I don't think anybody should be spending anything except on healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Don, thank you for getting my blood going today. That's good. I like that. It's circulated really well. And now we get to relax in the garden because UK garden designers are having to turn away clients after working from home has led to a huge demand for outdoor living spaces. So, Don, what kind of level are we talking? What level of demand are we talking about here?
Well, they're basically saying it's unprecedented. They've never seen anything like it. Garden designers in the UK are now expressing, according to the Society of Garden Designers and also according to the Pro Landscaper magazine, this is just phenomenal stuff. It's they have 166% increase in month-on-month inquiries. People, I mean, they're just being run off their feet, to be honest. And a lot of these particular people that are quoted in the article, designers are saying that they're actually have to turn away business, which is just unprecedented. Mm.
Don, how has the pandemic in particular affected the way that Brits are seeing their gardens?
Well, it's what everybody else is experiencing around the world. The reason garden designers are agreeing is the lockdown and working from home has really affected everybody's psyche, you know, and they really want that kind of, as you said in the beginning, peaceful atmosphere. They want to be able to, you know, get away from the, you know, 14 Zoom meetings that they've had during their day.
Yes.
And sit out in the garden and catch 10 minutes with a cup of coffee or something like that. It's important, obviously, to relax. And now, with everybody working at home, it's even more important.
Absolutely. What about the housing boom? We know there's been this huge flee to the suburbs in places like Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. How has the housing boom impacted the demand for garden spending?
Well, in Britain, as in the rest of the world, but particularly in Britain and also here, as we know, in Canada, you know, increases have been substantial in real estate, right? And so thanks to this recent boom in housing, suburban homeowners are finding it's actually more worthwhile to spend their spare cash on their garden than it is to kind of make that huge leap and into a new home. So they've just made that decision. They've said, no, we're staying put, but we're gonna actually spend some cash on where we're living now. So the designers that the Guardian spoke to said that a lot of trends are disappearing, like decking and artificial grass are falling out of fashion, and the popularity of natural ponds and plants that encourage biodiversity and wildlife are actually increasing.
So, Dawn, I know you've got a little bit of a green thumb. You've tasked myself and Mike Ross with keeping the plant alive in the AMI audio neck of the woods in the office, which we're doing a very good job of, by the way. I gave it a little bit of water today. I gave the turtle a little bit of water this morning. But I'm curious, as someone who does enjoy the garden, what is your go-to? What is the absolute must? If Dawn Dickinson was going to tell someone it's time to start designing a garden, what's the first thing somebody should do?
Well, one thing that I've learned very much so is also because I volunteer at another garden where my mother used to live, because the residents there are getting elderly and they can't do the hard work of gardening. So I was there yesterday, actually, in the evening after it cooled down a bit, and doing quite a bit of gardening, about 3 hours worth.
Oh, wow.
And the one thing I noticed is that people had put in plants that were not appropriate for the soil type. And this is where garden designers really come in. Like, everybody thinks garden designers, I can't afford that.
You take some dirt, you put some seeds in the dirt,
exactly.
You give it some water, and it grows.
Yeah, and they think of it as frivolous, but in actual fact, they're not, because they can really advise you on types of plants and soil. Like a lot of the plants that were placed in this garden were not suitable for the type of soil that is there, and they've died off. And, you know, they spent a great deal of money purchasing those plants at the beginning of the season, and I thought, you know, that's such a shame that they didn't take, you know, just a little bit extra effort, right?
Yeah. So, I like that, the holistic approach to gardening. You see, Dawn, I knew you'd have some good advice for the aspirational gardeners out there. Dawn, always a blast chatting with you. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the summertime season here in the GTA.
Okay, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right. Next Thursday's Canada Day. So, yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks. That's
okay.
All right. Bye, Dawn. That's Dawn Dickinson, producer of The Guardian this week, which, of course, you can hear Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio. Mike Ross is our news director, but he's also here for the big business story of the day. Mike, Google increasing investments in Canadian media.
Yeah. And this is where I put my skeptic's hat on just a little bit, because I wonder about a big tech company, quote unquote, investing in media and journalism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you've got Google Canada partnering with 8 publishers, including The Globe and Mail, Black Press Media, Glacier Media, Metro Media, Nova Scotia Saltwire Network, the Winnipeg Free Press, 2 other Ontario publishers, Narcity and Village Media. The publishers collectively that are involved in this deal own more than 70 national and regional media platforms. Post Media and Torstar not participating in this deal. But it's all part of Google's and Alphabet, their parent company's, $1 billion pledge to media companies across North America. They're calling it Google News Showcase, that should be up and running here in Canada in the fall. And basically, they're paying news organizations for their content. They're also saying that they are going to put marketing behind these publishing companies and these websites, and basically in an effort to compete with Apple Inc., Apple iPhones, Apple News Platform. And they say that part of their goal is to train about 5,000 journalists and journalism students over the next 3 years in Canada.
Wow.
So they're launching a journalism startup boot camp for entrepreneurs beginning this fall. The skeptic in me says, Dave.
Journalism boot camp, okay.
Yeah, well, the skeptic in me, Dave, says that, well, that's called journalism school.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to invest in journalism in this country, then don't do it through a Google company. do it through long-established journalism schools. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's the little bit of editorializing or skepticism I'm going to throw at this story. But it is a sizable investment. And one of the big things that they say they want to try and do is help a lot of small regional companies, media companies, websites, sort of shift from the traditional, you know, ink-stained fingers and you know, picking up that newspaper in the box at the corner or at the store to the digital world that we're becoming. And a lot of companies haven't had the funding in order to do that or the experience. And Google says they can help.
And, of course, reach is a part of it too, right? That when they say they're investing in terms of promotion, that means in the algorithm, inside the Google News algorithm, it means your stuff's going to pop up a little bit more frequently, which is, you know, it creates a lot of questions, but it is an investment nonetheless. So, Mike, thank you for bringing that to
You're
us.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Mike Ross with the big business story of the day. Coming up next, food and drink columnist Jenny Bovard will chat about some must-have cocktails and icy beverages you can enjoy this hot summer. You know what? That topic is so good, I might have to change my shirt. I might have to put on a Hawaiian shirt to get into the mood for that Jenny Bovard segment. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. The first ever wardrobe change in the history of Now with Dave Brown mid-show. I went from wearing my sweaty dress shirt that was being impacted by our lack of AC, and things have gone on to island time here as I've thrown on my Hawaiian shirt, orange and yellow and red popping off the screen, and palm trees for y'all to see. So getting into that summertime mood. And as you know, all week long, we've been hearing my overall jubilation of summertime. It goes well beyond wearing shorts and sandals or spending my life savings on sunscreen. It's all about enjoying a plethora of cold cocktails. Our food and drink columnist, Jenny Bovard, is also a fan of icy beverages, and she joins us this morning from Halifax. Hey, good morning, Jenny.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm well. It looks like you're rocking a Hawaiian shirt, too.
Yeah, and wink, wink, we didn't even plan it that way, right?
In no way, shape, or form did we plan that in any way, shape, or form. Hey, Jenny, let's jump right in here. Let's start in the world of caffeinated drinks. I love, love, love iced coffee and iced tea, and you've been experimenting with some flavors in those bevies yourself. What have you been playing around with?
Well, Dave, we have so much in common. I generally spend my life savings stocking up on sunscreen too. But I also love, 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 love iced coffees. And I will say, though, that the first coffee of the day, it's got to be a hot one. It's just not the same. But there's nothing fancy about my current hot or cold coffee routine. Once upon a time, I was a barista, so I do know all of the tricks. We have had an espresso machine at home. We have a French press. We have a frother. And as much as I try to be a morning person, I'm just not. So I've got to keep things simple in the morning. I just do freshly ground beans, medium blend, drip percolator. And if it's a hot day and I find that there's coffee left over at the end of the morning, perks of working from home, I'll throw a bunch of ice in my big insulated mug, pour that leftover coffee over it. And I've recently discovered a new product. Again, I love dairy, but it does not love me. Mm-mm. Like, I want to be a morning person. I want to love dairy, but they just don't jive with me. So I found a new product, and it's called, quote unquote, a coffee enhancer.
Okay.
And it's by, so it's by the brand Coffee Mate, and it's called Natural Bliss. Now, I get the almond milk caramel flavored version. And there is a coconut milk option, but I just find coconut milk is too thin to mimic the texture of a milk or a cream. So, I mean, that's it. I put some of that in there and I am good to go for the day. But I have been debating on getting a little bit fancier in the morning. I want to purchase some of that concentrated flavored syrup, the kind that small and big cafes use to flavor coffees. Mm. And you can buy that syrup at many coffee shops, including places like Starbucks. And in case anyone is ever doing a coffee run, my go-to is always hazelnut. everything.
Okay. So I do want to talk about some alternative flavors inside iced coffee, because typically vanilla is one of the big ones. I really enjoy adding vanilla at some of the major chains. But one of the Canadian major chains lets you put a shot of espresso in there. How do you feel about throwing a shot of espresso in your iced coffee?
Oh, that feels a bit strong for me. Like I'm usually big on big, bold, strong flavors, but that's a bit much for me. My other go-to is a basic iced double shot espresso. Double shot espresso Americano. I say it's basic, but when it comes out of my mouth, it's not basic
at all.
Well,
that's why I don't order that at certain places, because I would stumble all over it trying to get it out of my mouth.
So on top of all those other gadgets I mentioned, I also have a very old Tassimo machine, so I can make espresso really easily at home. It's just like a Keurig for those who are a bit more inclined with current technology, I guess. But I just keep it simple. Espresso Americano is really just espresso and water. It's simple. It's uplifting. And if it's the weekend, Dave, there's probably going to be some free poured Kahlua in there as well. just a coffee liqueur.
I wouldn't know anything about that, Jenny. I would know nothing about adding that in my life. Never once has a shot of Bailey's worked its way into my coffee. Never. Not once.
I wouldn't imagine.
No,
not you.
It's impossible. Jenny, let's move over to the world of iced tea. Now, this is a big question. What is the ultimate iced tea flavor? It's peach, right? It's got to be peach.
Well, peach iced tea is a beautiful thing. I will not debate you on that. As usual, though, Dave, I'm going to take us a little bit off the beaten path.
Okay.
Blue tea, also called butterfly pea flower tea. I'm not saying anything simple today. These are
no,
all
No, you're busting out all the words today.
So try and say all these things three times fast. I can barely get them out once correctly. But so this is this blue tea is a caffeine-free herbal tea, and it's nice hot, but it is amazing cold. It's a really unique fruity flavor, and true to its name, it's a really striking indigo blue color. And if you squeeze a little bit of lemon in there, the drink turns like a hot pink fuchsia color.
Oh, wow.
Which, let me describe my Hawaiian shirt a little bit. I've got like really bright pink and purple flowers all over my shirt. So that's definitely my thing, bright and beautiful things. And a bonus, the blue pea flower, the thing that this tea is made out of, it's also said to be an excellent for strengthening and stimulating hair growth. So there you go.
See, now we're talking. This is solving a lot of my problems all in one swoop. Jenny, what about one of the other big-time summer drinks, which is, of course, lemonade? Where do you stand on lemonade? Pink, yellow, or none at all?
The short answer is meh. I don't know. Lemonade is just a little bit too sweet for me generally, and I can't even think about all the work that goes into making my own not-too-sweet version at home.
Listen, that's fair. You don't have to like everything in this world, right? It's all a matter of taste. It's like food is like art. So, okay, let's go with the fact that you're not a fan of lemonade in and of itself. But do you have a use for lemonade when it comes to mixing it with something else?
Well, Dave, I think you're hinting at what's called a shandy. And a shandy is a 50-50 mix of beer and lemonade. Delicious, of course. And there are plenty of variations on the shandy. My summer favorite is the Radler. And Radler, directly translated in German, means cyclist. So hello, close to my heart, right? The Radler is traditionally a half and half Pilsner beer mixed with a carbonated citrus pop or soda. And I actually learned about the Radler's history while eating and drinking my way through some of Europe, which seems like forever ago. And the creation of the Radler was really just a happy accident by a German innkeeper who in 1922, he noticed that he was running out of beer because 13,000 very thirsty cyclists. Yes, you heard me right. 13,000.
Oh my gosh.
It was the boom of cycling at this time. They were cycling on a trail that went past his establishment just outside of Munich. So he was running out of beer and he had to get creative. So he started mixing the beer with carbonated citrus and the cyclists just loved it. It's usually only 3% alcohol content, which makes it more consumable if you're going to continue to be active and cycling. And of course you can make these at home, Dave. But the pre-made Radler in cans has also soared in popularity in recent years. It's been picked up by like all the major beer companies. It's available everywhere. But my recommendation, if you want to give a more traditional Radler a try, I would suggest the Stiegl Grapefruit Radler. That's where it's at. And honestly, it's the only way that I found grapefruit to be consumable at all.
Yeah, grapefruit, I still don't understand why people like grapefruit, but you're right. Sometimes in something like a beer or a Rattler, it goes really well. There's a brewery in Ottawa called Beyond the Pale that makes this beer called Pink Fuzz, which uses a grape. It's a grapefruit-infused wheat beer. And normally I'd say, ugh, to get that away from me. But in the summertime, ice cold out of the fridge, oof, there's something to it. There is definitely
beer makes everything
something
better.
To it. That's true. Jenny, just as we're wrapping up here, you've actually come across something really neat where childhood treats are meeting beverages that are a bit more adult. What's the scoop on Poptails?
Well, I'd like to acknowledge that, first of all, it's not even 11 a.m. here on the East Coast, and I realize it's even earlier elsewhere where people are listening, but how could we talk about summer drinks without including some of the alcoholic options?
Listen, it's taken all my strength not to mention mojitos this entire segment.
Okay, but, you know, let's just encourage people to drink responsibly.
Of course,
and know that
of course.
There's always a non-alcoholic option available,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fun stuff here, Poptails. This is the most fun thing. Okay, they're basically cocktails in popsicle form. And whatever your favorite cocktail may be, there is a popsicle cocktail version. And I do recommend following a recipe. Just Google a recipe so you get the right ratio. That way it'll freeze properly. I've had some mishaps, but they did not go wasted. Slurp anything up. It's fine. My personal favorite, though, it's more of like a boozy Oreo milkshake in popsicle form. And if we're allowed to put up recipes on the blog that have alcohol in them, I would love to share that one.
I think we did on St. Patrick's Day. I can't recall if we did or not, but, you know, we'll do what we can. AMI.ca/now blog. Send it over and I'll pass it to Andrika, our senior producer, and she can make these editorial decisions with my input. Jenny, that's a great idea. Now, of course, you're also the host of the Low Vision Moments podcast. Just before we let you go, I did want to check in with you. What's on deck in the Low Vision Moments world?
Oh, well, we're a little late again this month, but sometime early next week, I have a bit of a different format episode coming out where I'm going to interview and chat with my husband about some of our shared low vision moments, what it's like to be married and have to deal daily with someone with low vision and albinism. And we have got some roaring fun stories. So it's going to be well worth the wait.
It's one of the things I love about your show, Jenny. It's always a great look behind the curtain. So I look forward to tuning into that episode. All the best to you, Jenny. Enjoy these summer days and we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Bottoms up, Dave. Have a good one.
Bottoms up, indeed. Jenny Bovard is a food and drink columnist and the host of AMI's Low Vision Moments podcast, which you can find on all major podcasting platforms. Speaking of platforms where you find AMI-related stuff, don't be afraid to find us on social media and vote on our daily poll. Today, we're asking you what is the best summertime drink. And of course, if your favorite is not listed, please write in and feel free to write in cocktails or mocktails as well. So we have iced tea, iced coffee, lemonade, and water as your options, but definitely encouraging you to write in. And someone you're going to hear from a little bit later in the show, Karen McGee, has chimed in at AMI Audio on Twitter, and she says sangria. Karen McGee has serious, serious taste. All right, let's wrap up the hour by sharing a couple of news stories. Let's begin with the active COVID-19 case numbers in Canada. Currently in Canada, there are 9,631 active cases of COVID-19. 26,175 people have died. Manitobans will be able to get their hair cut, grab some food at a restaurant, and meet with large groups of people as the province moves into its first step of a reopening plan a week ahead of schedule. Premier Brian Pallister says vaccination goals have been surpassed and some restrictions will be loosened on Saturday.
After nearly a year and a half of fighting COVID-19, it's time for Manitobans to start to get some of their freedoms back and enjoy this beautiful summer. This is what we all want to do.
Then moving next door into Ontario, Ontario is to enter step two of its reopening plan on June the 30th. Ontario will move ahead into the second phase of its reopening plan on June the 30th. 2 days ahead of schedule, the province announced the change this morning. The second stage of the three-part reopening plan allows haircuts and similar services and will see limits on gathering and businesses rolled back further. Outdoor attractions like water parks can open and outdoor performances and team sports can resume. That stage of the plan was set to take effect on July the 2nd, but vaccination targets have already been surpassed. And I'd like to send a shout out to our boss, Andy Frank, who took the opportunity to book me for a haircut this morning as soon as he heard this news. So July the 2nd, we're going to get rid of some of this shaggy dew, which I am very much excited to be rid of. Moving over to the Atlantic provinces, traffic is moving again on the Trans-Canada Highway between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Don Kelly has more.
The Mounties made several arrests as a blockade protesting Nova Scotia's COVID-19 travel restrictions came down. Protesters stopped traffic after Nova Scotia announced Tuesday that travelers from New Brunswick would need to self-isolate on arrival, while travelers from PEI and Newfoundland and Labrador would not have to. The blockade near the provincial boundary disrupted business and led to the cancellation of more than 100 medical appointments. Don Kelly, The Canadian Press.
Then over to the Yukon, where their top doctor says the territory's COVID-19 outbreak is likely linked to one case introduced around Victoria Day. It spread with gatherings in June. Dr. Brendan Hanley says the new infection shows that a 72% vaccination rate is not enough to prevent the spread of COVID-19, and at least 80% of the population should receive their shots.
And then to be able to trace back to an individual event or person becomes very difficult. You cannot piece together enough information to get that that story, and that person is no longer waving a flag saying that they had COVID.
Hanley says the past 14 days there have been more cases in Yukon than in the first 14 months of the pandemic. And let's wrap up the hour just by sharing the vaccination numbers, the overall vaccination numbers across the country. The provinces and territories administered over 516,000 doses of vaccine yesterday. Nearly 33.6 million total doses have been given. 67% of the total population has received at least one dose, and 22% of the population is fully vaccinated. Over 37.6 million doses have been delivered, and 89.11% of supply has been used. And I was very delighted yesterday that my support crew, my family, my mom, my dad, my sister, while I was hosting the show, were all working behind the scenes inside Ontario's vaccination portals. And the old DB is going to get shot number two tomorrow in the afternoon. Bring on them summer vibes. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. It's Thursday, June the 4th, 2021. Happy Saint Jean Baptiste to our friends in Quebec who are celebrating Fête Nationale today. Enjoy. Coming up in the second hour of the show, Stephen Scott from Double Tap Canada describes the AirFly Pro, a new wireless headphone adapter for Apple's AirPods. And Karen McGee gives her central regional reports, including a story on our new little library in Sudbury that is sharing diverse voices and perspectives. Let's begin the hour by handing things over to Mike Ross, who has the regional news update.
Thank you, Dave. We'll begin in British Columbia. And the BC Regional Chief for the Assembly of First Nations says an agreement over the sharing of residential school records is a positive development for Indigenous communities looking for answers about their loved ones. Chief Terry Teague says it's important the records be released quickly, with full transparency, and without any obstacles to access for First Nations communities. The Sisters of St. Anne and the Royal BC Museum announced an agreement yesterday to enhance access to the Catholic Order's private records relating to the Kamloops Indian Residential School and other residential schools staffed by the nuns. The former Kamloops school grounds are where ground-penetrating radar identified what are believed to be the remains of 215 children in unmarked graves. To the Prairies and a First Nation east of Regina will hold a virtual news conference this morning about what it calls the horrific and shocking discovery of hundreds of unmarked graves at the site of the former Merivale Indian Residential School. The Cowessess First Nation says the number of unmarked graves found will be the most substantial to date in Canada. Perry Bellegarde, Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, says the finding of Cowessess is absolutely tragic, but not surprising. and urges all Canadians to stand with First Nations in this extremely difficult and emotional time. Premier Scott Moe says all of Saskatchewan mourns with those who were discovered buried in unmarked graves near the former residential school site. To Ontario, and news now breaking that the province will move into the second stage of its reopening plan sooner than expected. The province was set to enter the second stage of its three-step reopening plan on July 2nd. That will see services such as haircuts resume and allow opening venues outdoors like water parks and other attractions. Well, now, July 30th is the date. Small gatherings of 5 people indoors and larger gatherings of 25 people outdoors will also be permitted, along with outdoor team sports and events with restrictions. Now that most Ontarians have their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine, the province is turning its attention to residents still hesitant about the shots. Dr. Dirk Heyer, a member of the province's vaccine task force, says 1 in 4 Ontarians have yet to get their first shot, leaving them vulnerable to COVID-19 and threatening the healthcare system. There are some signs that registration for first doses is waning. The top doctor in Simcoe Muskoka says the region is hitting a plateau for interest in first doses and might struggle to reach 80% coverage without stronger efforts. And in the Atlantic region, health officials in Nova Scotia reporting no new cases of COVID-19. With no infections reported yesterday, the province has a total of 60 active cases. 3 people are in hospital as a result of the virus, including 1 patient in intensive care. Newfoundland also reporting no new cases. There are now 13 active cases in that province. Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Janice Fitzgerald, released the stats yesterday. Newfoundland and Labrador lagging behind, though, when it comes to the more than 20% of Canadians who have received both doses of vaccine, with just over 10% of the province's citizens having received their second dose. And those are your top regional headlines going coast to coast across the country.
Thank you very much for that one, Mike. Let's bring in Jeff Ryman and have a sports chat. Jeff, I almost feel bad for audience members who don't care about the Montreal Canadiens and Las Vegas Golden Knights series, because we've been talking about it a lot. And guess what? We're talking about it again today as Montreal is on the verge of a berth to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thunk? I keep saying that and it keeps, you know, circling in my mind as how crazy is it to think that the Montreal Canadiens are 1 win away from making the Stanley Cup final?
It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. If under a conventional playoff year, they would have missed the playoffs. They had the 18th best record in the league.
And now here they are on the verge of dethroning one of the top teams. I think, you know, if you look at the Vegas numbers, I bet you there's a lot of money on Vegas potentially winning the Stanley Cup. And now they're 1 win away from not even making it to the finals. So just a crazy sort of situation here. But I'm kind of for it. I've been sort of drawn in. I've been a sucker to, for this sort of underdog story, this Cinderella story, if you will. And now Montreal, I mean, they don't look out of place. And we've been saying that for the last couple of games. They looked really, really good. But I think it's also Vegas looking extremely flat. And if your top players aren't playing like top players, which has been the case for Vegas for the majority, if not all, of this playoff series, you're not going to win too many games. And it looks like they've sort of hit a wall. Rounds 1 and 2 versus Minnesota and Colorado were probably pretty taxing on the Vegas Golden Knights. But I believe like Mark Stone only has a handful of points in 13 playoff games so far this mm-hmm. season. Not normally going to cut it for a team. And, now they're on the verge of elimination.
So, Jeff, you were asking about Vegas numbers. Now, I can't speak to what the start of this series was in regards to favorites versus underdogs. Vegas were the clear favorite. I know even, for example, on the game on Tuesday night, Vegas was over 2-1 favorite to win the game. But if someone had put a wager on the Montreal Canadiens to win the Stanley Cup at the start of the playoffs, they were 28-1, plus 2,800. If you'd bet $1 You could have won $28 if you'd bet on the Canadians to win the Stanley Cup. Now, that isn't to say the Canadians are A, going to win this series, or B, win the Stanley Cup. But just to think about that, they had the second lowest odds in the entire playoff field to win the Stanley Cup, and here they are on the precipice, needing one win at home on Saint-Jean-Baptiste Day in Montreal. Goodness gracious, that city is going to go wild tonight if Montreal wins.
Absolutely bonkers, Dave. I think 3,500 inside the Bell Center, and it's going to feel a lot louder than that. And like you said, if they win, the streets of Montreal are going to go nuts. First time for them since 1993, they could find themselves in a position to potentially win the Stanley Cup. So yeah, I mean, it just seems like a great day for Montreal right now. They're celebrating, and they're going to continue to celebrate potentially into the wee hours of the morning here. But I mean, they've played well, and we touched on this, I think, the last time, or pretty much all week, because we've been talking about them all week,
pretty much every day.
But just the way their team has been constructed, they do have that veteran presence, that veteran experience, like Corey Perry, for instance. Like, the guy's playing with his nose hanging off of his face, you know, and he just seems to come back. He's always, you know, involved in the game in one way or another. He's had some great scoring chances the last couple of games. He's drawn some penalties. He's mixed it up. He's one of those pestier guys. But you can't forget that he's won a Stanley Cup, and he's also went to the Stanley Cup final last year with Dallas. So, I mean, I just feel like the way that Montreal has been constructed, you know, it's funny because during the regular season, you wouldn't have noticed it a whole lot. But now that they actually find themselves here in this situation, it's pretty evident that they've got a pretty well-rounded team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I actually think they're going to miss the playoffs next year, irrespective of what happens tonight, Saturday, or in the Stanley Cup Finals.
They have a bit of free agents that are going to be, you know, on the market. Yeah, like a bunch of their core, like Corey Perry is signed just for 1 year. I believe Thomas Tatar is another one. Yeah, they've got a bunch of work to do in the offseason.
Jeff, we should at least explore Vegas Golden Knights head coach Peter DeBoer's decision to go back to Marc-Andre Fleury on Tuesday night after Robin Leonard played so well on Sunday night. Do you think that might have contributed at all to his team's slow start? That here's Leonard, who plays this game for them on Sunday, plays really well, gives them a chance to win, and they go back to the good guy, right? Oh, we got to do the good guy thing for Marc-Andre Fleury, as opposed to saying, no, it's the playoffs, performance earns you your spot.
It's kind of a weird situation, Dave, because all season long, they used the 1A, 1B goaltending situation where they literally went back and forth pretty much on a game-to-game basis between Fleury and Leonard. But the choice of Pete DeBoer not to go with Robin Leonard after he picked up a pretty impressive win in game four, I believe it was, you know, it sort of had me scratching my head. Like, I thought it was pretty much a no-brainer. But at the same time, when you have a goaltender like Marc-Andre Fleury, in your mind as a coach, you're probably thinking it's kind of a win-win situation here. We hear the term goaltender controversy.
It's a win-win situation until you lose. And now you face elimination.
But I mean, either way, those goaltenders on any given night are pretty stellar for the most part. That's basically what my point is what I'm trying to get across here. But yeah, it is. I don't know what happened. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury, like he's still one of those goaltenders who can steal you games. It's just lately, just hasn't been bringing it as he typically would. And so that's why I'm still a little confused as to why Pete DeBoer wouldn't go back to Leonard, who looked a lot fresher than Marc-Andre Fleury. And it'll be interesting to see who he goes with tonight, because that's going to be another storyline that we'll have to follow into literally the mere moments before puck drop.
And by the way, I'm not blaming Marc-Andre Fleury for that loss on Tuesday. Vegas came out flat and Montreal outplayed them for two periods. The only one of the goals you could even somewhat put on Fleury, that was on the team. But I'm just thinking about that psychology side, right? What it says to your team that we're not playing with the winner of the last game. We're going to the guy who lost the last game he played and lost his job, not due to injury, but due to performance. So I do wonder about that, about the mentality of winning that's so important in all levels of sports, but especially in the playoff times in professional sports. Jeff, you are off tomorrow. I'm off tomorrow. Mike Ross will be in my chair. A friend of the program, Luca Capone, going to be in the sports reporter chair. He and Mike are going to talk about a big weekend in Euro soccer. So for those who are tired of hearing you and me talk about hockey, they're going to get a little bit of a change up tomorrow. Jeff, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you, Dave.
That's Jeff Ryman. He is at the AMI sports desk. Nazreen Abdel-Majid is at the AMI weather desk.
Thanks, Dave. Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. Cornerbrook, mainly sunny, high of 22, except a high of 17 along the coast. Charlottetown, mainly sunny with a high of 21. In St. John, mainly sunny, fog patches dissipating with a high of 22, except a high of 16 along parts of the coast. Quebec City, sunny, high of 25. In Toronto, we can drink some summer drinks today because it's sunny. High of 27, humidex of 29. In Sault Ste. Marie, mainly cloudy, few showers. There's a risk of a thunderstorm with a high of 19. Brandon, sunny, cloudiness increasing with a high of 27. Regina, cloudiness increasing, a few showers with a high of 22. Lethbridge, mainly cloudy, 60% chance of showers and a risk of thunderstorm with a high of 21. Red Deer, rain, then a mix of sun and clouds with a chance of showers and a high of 22. In Whitehorse, we're expecting a few showers, then mainly cloudy with a high of 18. Kelowna, mix of sun and clouds with a high of 30 and a humidex of 32. And in Vancouver, mix of sun and clouds with a high of 23 and a humidex of 28. And that was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Thank you very much, Nazreen. I do want to remind you of incredible AMI content coming down the pipeline. A new episode of Accessing Art with Amy drops today. Listen as our friend Amy Amanti discusses inclusive fashion with designer Carol Taylor of Queensland, Australia. You can find Accessing Art with Amy on all major podcasting platforms. Coming up next, Stephen Scott from Double Tap Canada describes the AirFly Pro, a new wireless headphone adapter for Apple's AirPods. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Let's talk tech with Stephen Scott of Double Tap Canada. Of course, you can find that program 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursdays, on AMI Audio. And Stephen joins us today from Glasgow, Scotland. Hey, good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Dave. How are you today?
I'm well. Nice to chat with you yet again. And Stephen, I hear that your credit card has gotten another workout with the new wireless headphone adapter, the AirFly Pro, and you want to tell us a little bit about it today. The item came out in the fall of 2019, but it's new to you, and you purchased it, and we know you love yourself some gadgets. So what are some of the practical applications for the AirFly Pro?
Well, first off, can I say I actually bought this in the fall of 2019 when it came out,
and I've only recently started
using it.
Oh, I see.
And I'll tell you why, because I bought, you know, I'm up to date with my tech, Dave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, just like me.
Yeah, exactly, up to date with the very latest gadgets and gizmos. So I bought myself, wait for it, an iPod Classic.
Nice.
Right? So I get myself this iPod Classic. Everybody on the show, Mark and Sean, are just slamming me for it constantly, saying, why are you buying something that is years old? What are you doing? I just love my old iPod. I love the old iPod.
Because it was the height of technology, man. Like, the iPod changed the world.
Exactly. And the clicky wheel, you know, little clicky wheel thing. Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, I can't really see it. I can barely, you know, get any accessibility on it. One of the few devices that had any. But even so, I still love it because I can hit play. It starts playing music. Just live in shuffle mode. That suits me. But here's the thing. I've got, like, the greatest headphones. I've got the AirPods Pro. I've got the AirPods Max. I want to use them with my iPod Classic, but of course it only has a headphone jack on it, right? It's got a 3.5 mil headphone jack. So how do you get wireless headphones to work with that? Well, this is where the AirFly Pro comes in. Now, the reason it's called the AirFly Pro is because it's actually built for, you know, when you go on a flight, remember those days, Dave, we used to go on holiday and go places and get on planes?
I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, you would take this little device and you would stick it into the seat of the aircraft and you would be able to listen to whatever was on the screen, you know, on the
right,
little display.
Right, okay,
films,
yes.
TV shows, whatever. So this would actually bounce the signal from there wirelessly to your AirPods or to, you know, your headphones, your wireless headphones. And that is exactly what the AirFly Pro is all about. It's about flights, but you could use it for a whole wide range of things. If you went to the gym and you wanted to use the gym equipment, you could use the same gadget there as well. So you'd be able to get, you know, the audio from that device to the headphones you have, which means you don't have to carry around extra headphones, mm-hmm. wired headphones, or God forbid, use headphones that someone has left behind.
Oh gosh. Awful. Stephen, can you imagine getting on the treadmill and putting used headphones from somebody else in your ears?
I'm not a germaphobe, but no way. No way am I doing that. And that was pre-COVID. I wouldn't be doing that, right?
Yeah, exactly. COVID might not spread from the ears, but I don't want to take any chances.
I'm not taking the chance either, no. So, you know, that was some of the applications. But, of course, you know, I'm using it with my iPod Classic because I can plug in this little device and it wirelessly sends the signal from the device to my headphones.
So now you mentioned this thing came out in 2019, but it's Apple, right? There's got to be a million different versions of these.
Oh, there are. I mean, you can buy, I mean, Mark was telling me on the show, as you'll hear this evening, that, you know, there's like lots of cheap versions you can buy. Essentially, as he quite rightly points out, this is a Bluetooth transmitter, right? That's kind of what this is.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I think about it is it's because it has Apple involved, it's got magic fairy dust in it, and therefore makes it better. That's my take on it, and I stand by it. That's why I spent more money on this than I would have spent on a Bluetooth transmitter, which would probably cost like $12 off Amazon or eBay or whatever. You know, you probably pick one up in Best Buy. They are available, and oftentimes they're used in cars. That's often how you use them. People tend to use them to connect their phone to their car or vice versa. You know, so you can do all kinds of fun stuff with them that way. That's all it is, really. It's a Bluetooth transmitter, but, you know, it's got Apple stuff related, so it's better.
Right, of course, it has the little stamp on it. It has the little Apple stamp on
exactly,
it. So,
yeah.
So therefore, what did it cost?
They don't make it, though. I should point that out. It's made by 12 South.
Okay. 12 South. So what did it cost you to make this purchase?
Well, I bought it in an airport, so I probably spent double what it actually costs. It actually costs $69.
Okay.
Now, that's for the AirFly Pro. You can get, there's a Classic, there's a Duo, there's a whole wide range of different ones, actually. There's a ton of different types you can get. The Classic, the Duo, the Pro, and the USB-C as well, which is just a different way of charging. But I think you can also connect other devices to them as well. I think in the UK and Canada, you only really get the AirFly Pro that's available. I haven't tried the other ones yet, but it's a really cool device, and it just is so simple, really, really simple. Just a little box, very small, size of a matchbox, with a little 3.5mm cable coming out of it that you plug into whatever device you want to send the audio from to your headphones.
Do you find that it's fairly easy to use? Like, is the pairing process between the application or the adapter to your phone fairly straightforward?
Super easy, super easy. In fact, with the AirPods, and this is why they sell it that way, with the AirPods, it works instantly. It just connects up. It's a really simple process. You know, you can use other headphones with it, though, and this is important. So Bang & Olufsen headphones, Beats headphones, which does make sense. Beats now owned by Apple.
Yes, yes.
Some Sony brands, and Bose as well. I love my QC35s. Mark II, I should point out. That was a pair of headphones that my wife bought me for Christmas one year, and I absolutely adore them. I love those headphones. Are they better than the AirPods Max, though? Well, I can't say in front of her. But, yeah, the AirPods Max are better. But the point is you can use different headphones with it, which is really good as well. Some people think these are only for Apple products. They just work seamlessly with Apple products. That's the point.
Stephen, we know that you're an audiophile. What's your number? What's the number you're comfortable paying for a set of headphones? We were talking about this on air a couple of weeks ago. I'll pull them out of my pocket right now. I bought these sort of like AirPod knockoffs by a company called Boltoon, and I bought these on Amazon for $39.99, and they're awesome. They're awesome for $39.99. But what's your number in regards to what you're willing to spend on a set of headphones?
So I too in my hand have $18. I don't think it's Bolton or whatever it was that it came from, but you know, these are very cheap, nasty AirPods. I'll tell you why, because I actually have the AirPods Pro, but they're not working at the moment. There's some serious problems with them. So I didn't want to go out and buy another pair of them, so I bought these cheap ones. And actually, do you know what? For listening to voiceover or getting navigation off the phone or just listening to JAWS off a PC, they're actually fine. And these cost me $18. So that's not too bad, right? In terms of what I would pay, I think I'd probably top it at £600, so probably what, maybe $800-$900. I think that's as high as I'd want to go, and that's exactly what I did with the AirPods Max. I didn't want to really go much higher than that. I know you can spend a lot of money on headphones, but to be honest, even at my ears, I'm quite happy with that. And a lot of people say the AirPods Max are too expensive anyway. So some people are happy paying $200-$300, you know, even up to $400 for, say, the Bose, which will give you an excellent audio quality.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very difficult because it's all very subjective. Some people love Beats, for example, which I find they're just too bassy and too, it's not an enjoyable listen to me. The bass is too heavy, whereas Bose is nice. And of course, the Apple are perfect.
Because everything they do, utter perfection, totally and thoroughly. Yeah. Stephen, what else do you
guys, such a fan.
What else do you guys have on deck for the show tonight?
Honestly, the show is wild again, as it usually is. As you know, you've been on
it. What a surprise.
It's like a Wild West. It really is. It is insane. We're going to be talking, mainly, I think we spent the first half hour trying to figure out how to get Sean's mic working properly. Because it just sounds terrible for the first half hour. But we get it sorted in the end. Now, we're going to talk about all kinds of things. We're going to be talking about these headphones. We're going to be talking a little bit about Windows 11 because the big announcement is today.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have more on that for you next week here on Now with Dave. See, I'm even promoting on your show, Dave.
I love that. Pure pro.
But yeah, we are going to give you all the details on it. The big event happens 11 a.m. Eastern, where Microsoft will be announcing what will be next for Windows. So a lot of us are interested in that. In particular, what are they going to do with accessibility? Because that's, of course, the area a lot of other tech shows don't talk about.
Right.
We will.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Stephen, before we let you go, I know you've been living a healthier lifestyle of late, especially with your mushroom coffee that you've been drinking. But it is indeed summertime. I don't know what the weather's like over in Scotland today, but it's quite hot throughout Canada today. So we're asking folks on our daily poll at AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook, what's your favorite summertime drink? Now, the options we have listed here are iced coffee, iced tea, lemonade, and water. But Stephen, we definitely encourage you to go off the board.
I think iced coffee and lemonade would do me. I'd be happy with that. Do you know, I only recently get into iced coffee. People in Scotland think you're insane because why would you not want to drink a hot drink in a country where it's constantly cold? But iced coffee, good. Lemonade, although I will say sugar-free lemonade, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Always thinking about the health.
This is all part of that new healthy lifestyle that you and I are living, my friend, through and through. Hey, Stephen, all the best to you. Enjoy the show tonight. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
And to you, Dave. Take care.
That's Stephen Scott. He's one of the hosts of Double Tap Canada, which airs Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio. And he joined us this morning for us, this afternoon for him in Glasgow, Scotland. Of course, if you're listening to the podcast, though, you could be listening in the evening. So time is all relative. And of course, you can follow the Double Tap team on Canada at Double Tap Canada. At Double Tap Canada on Twitter is where you follow that team. Speaking of AMI audio programming, you do want to tune in this weekend to The Pulse, this Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern time on The Pulse. Judah Gupta is going to speak about the recent passage of Bill C-15, which commits Canada to adopt the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Then Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern time, Judah discusses reopening anxiety with psychiatrist Arlene McDougall of Western University. That's The Pulse, which you can hear weekends, 10 a.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio. Coming up next, we have entertainment news with Andrika Delanarol, and we'll find out what's trending with Nisreen Abdel-Majid. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI.
It was a wild, crazy scene.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. As we continue to play a game of musical chairs here in the Now with Dave Brown family, we welcome into the show Andrika Delanarol with the Entertainment Report. So, Andrika, you're filling in for Daniel Panamondo, who's filling in for Bruce McLaren, who's filling in for Sebastian McKenzie. And that's Bruce's way of saying one more time, I'm here. Get to the point, Dave. Stop talking about the musical chairs. So, Andrika, you want to talk about an era coming to an end in late night television.
End of an era indeed. Tonight we're going to be saying farewell to the king of late night. Now tonight is the last episode of the TBS late night show, Conan. And it's also the last appearance of Conan O'Brien as a host on late night television. And he's been doing it for so long, since 1993. And it's really interesting to think about it, because today, I mean, he's in a pool of about more than 20 late night hosts. But when he first started, it was just him and two other people, mm-hmm. Jay Leno and David Letterman. And so it's a pretty big deal tonight, because he is one of the he is from that generation, and he's one of the last ones. Currently, he is the longest running late night host with 28 years. And as you know, I'm a massive fan of Conan. Mm-hmm. That's why I had to talk about him today. I was actually lucky enough to go on a taping of Conan back in 2019. It was one of the last trips I took. And I don't know if we have this photo here, but there's a photo of me standing beside a gigantic, massive version of Conan O'Brien as a bobblehead. And what I can tell you is I did push the head. It's so big and so tall. It's like double my size. I'm about 5'7". And the head does move, so it's pretty cool. But, you know, Dave, I was thinking today what to talk about Conan, and I thought, you know, let's do a quick snapshot of his career over the years, because he's had a very interesting career. You know, started off as a writer on SNL, moved mm-hmm. on to The Simpsons. He did that very famous monorail episode. That was Conan O'Brien's episode. Yeah.
They say that the golden age of The Simpsons was when Conan O'Brien was in the writer's room.
And it's so true. He was one of the smartest writers on the show, and it only made sense, you know, when you think about it, when you put the pieces together. Yes, it was part of Conan's era with The Simpsons. And of course, then he went on to do Late Night with Conan O'Brien, which he was kind of a nobody at that point. He, like I said, he was a writer who's always behind the scenes. So going in with NBC, it was very rocky off the mm-hmm. start. It took a few years to develop, you know, their comedy bits and everything, but NBC stuck with them. And of course, I would say around the 2000s is when his career really took off. You know, they had so many different characters on the show, so many different sketches. And of course, that led him to The Tonight Show, which was very short-lived. But which is interesting because, you know, as we remember, you know, he lost The Tonight Show because it was a whole battle with NBC, with them wanting to move the time slot and then giving it back to Jay Leno. And what we saw is a very pivotal moment in his career. For him, was probably the biggest downfall of his career, but I think it was a pivotal moment because we started to see a collection of people all across the world support him. We had fans, you saw TV anchors, radio personalities, everybody's covering the story and saying, hey, I'm with Team Coco or Team Conan. And that's where this like army of literally Team Coco came about. And then we see him move to TBS. He starts doing travel specials. His brand expands. Then, you know, his catalog of segments go on YouTube, more digestible bits for newer audiences. Then he does this like this podcast, which is the number one podcast in America. And then eventually he builds a podcast network with so many comedians. So we've seen the evolution of Conan, and it just seems like a natural path for him to move on to HBO Max.
Yeah, that's it. So it's HBO really Max is the new partnership here. Andrika, mm-hmm. so you've mentioned you're a fan. Why Conan as opposed to, say, Jay Leno, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert? I was always a Craig Kilborn guy back in the day. He was going head-to-head with Conan. Why Conan for you?
Conan is very smart, and he has a very different sense of comedy compared to all the other late night hosts. He's the type of guy where you put him in any situation with any guests, and he is just, he's a fast thinker. So as soon as someone says something to him, he's already like, there's a joke coming out of his mouth. It's never a pause. It's never, always been thinking about it for a few minutes in the interview. He's immediately like on the ball. And I think that's my favorite part. But also he does amazing sketches. They call them remotes, and you can find them all over YouTube. And again, they put him in these odd scenarios. Like there's one episode where they put him in the Taco Bell headquarters, and he is just so funny. He makes me laugh out loud like no other late night host. Mm-hmm. And there's been times where my only advice is if you watch Conan sketches, don't watch it while eating dinner because you might choke.
So when's the last show? Is it tonight?
It is tonight. The finale is tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern and 9 p.m. Central on TBS. But if you don't have that, you can always catch it CTV at 1:55 a.m. Nice. Eastern time. But you know what? My recommendation is wait till tomorrow because you can watch it for free at ctv.ca.
Excellent. Top notch. Andrika, always fun catching up. Thank you for filling in for Dano today.
Yes, thank you so much. And I love your shirt. I kind of went with the theme myself with the Conan shirt for my segment.
the first ever wardrobe change in the middle of a Now with Dave Brown episode. Yeah. For folks who just tuned in and now, that's why I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Earlier in the show, not wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Made the change ahead of our summer drinks conversation with Jenny Bovard. Actually, Andrika, where do you stand on the summer drinks daily poll at AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook? What's your summer drink of choice?
Okay, you know the hottest day of the summer where you're sweating, you feel like you're going to die? Nothing beats an ice-cold, sweating glass of Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola. Yeah, I see Coca-Cola through and
gotta
through.
Gotta love it.
Hey, Andrika, thank you for this.
Thank you so much, Dave. See ya.
That's Andrika Dellanerol filling in for Daniel Penamondo. She's our senior producer here on Now with Dave Brown. We're having more of the crew standing by, but you'll have to hear from me for a couple minutes here because it's time for the Accessibility Story Roundup. The Ontario government is investing $3.7 million in a partnership with the Ontario Community Support Association to help people with disabilities, including individuals and seniors with mobility issues, to get to and from vaccination sites. The Accessible Drive to Vaccines program will ensure that anyone who wants a vaccine is able by connecting eligible individuals with staff and volunteers who will drive them to and from local vaccination sites across the province. This includes individuals who have not yet received their first shot or anyone who may require additional support to access their second. Individuals must have a vaccine appointment booked for the date of transportation requested. Eligible individuals must be a person with a disability within the meaning of the Ontario Accessibility for Ontarians. My gosh, it trips me up after saying it a million times. Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, and depending on logistics, it may be the same driver both ways or two separate drivers. One caregiver or support person will also be permitted to accompany the person on this accessible transportation initiative. Another story I want to share with you coming to you from Alberta. A new school in Edmonton will be named after Joey Moss, a legendary locker room attendant for the National Hockey and Football teams. Moss, who was born with Down syndrome, became the Edmonton Oilers locker room attendant in 1984. In 1986, Joey Moss joined Edmonton's football team and held roles with both organizations for 30 years, and he captured the hearts of Edmonton sports fans for his enthusiastic participation at hockey games and during the national anthems. Edmonton Public Schools says Joey Moss School in southwestern part of the city will be for students from kindergarten to grade 9 and will be open in the fall of 2022. Let's bring in Nizreen Abdel-Majid and find out what's trending. Nizreen, I just shared stories out of Ontario and Alberta. You've got a story out of Quebec.
Yes, you mentioned at the top of the show. So one of Canada's top trends is hashtag Bon Saint Jean. Saint Jean Baptiste Day is held annually on June 24th. It's known as the feast day of Saint John the Baptist, a Jewish preacher who baptized Jesus in the River Jordan. The Saint Jean Baptiste Day celebrations began in 1834. In that year, Léger Duvernay, an influential journalist, visited the St. Patrick's Day celebrations in Montreal and was inspired to create a similar event for French Canadians. In 1843, he established the Saint Jean Baptiste Society to promote the celebration of Saint Jean Baptiste Day. It's a day of celebration in Quebec and other areas of French Canada, and apparently even in some areas in the U.S., this is a public holiday, so they have various events happening just like other public holidays. They have picnics, parades, tournaments, concerts, even firework displays. Mm-hmm. Now, because of restrictions, you do have to search up what is exactly open this year to celebrate. Dave, I have a question for you. So during any public holiday, are you the type to go all out and celebrate or... it's just like any other day for you.
Nizreen, there are two phases in my life, and I think turning 28 was almost the exact mile marker between the two. I used to love me partying on a public holiday. Big concerts, firework shows, get me amongst the people, bring me amongst the crowds. And then something happened. I think I became old and no longer wanted to use porta potties and spend time around strangers. So I do typically love me a good festival, but I'm not huge on the big ones. I prefer to watch my fireworks from afar now. And that's what I loved about my old condo in Ottawa. I was able to watch the Canada Day fireworks as well as the Saint Jean-Baptiste fireworks in Gatineau right from my balcony. So easy access to my fridge, easy access to my own bathroom, and no crowds to worry about.
It's funny you say that. I can relate. So I feel like a few years ago, I would be the type to go to Celebration Square or even Nathan Phillips Square and watch the fireworks and celebrate with everybody. We'd have, the tattoos that you'd have to put on your face and pat it down with the water. That's what I had all over my face, the Canada flag for Canada Day. And that was those lit times. Now I feel like we just go sit on our balcony and just watch the fireworks. It's not that it's boring. It's just, times has passed. It's not as we've grown.
It used to be that a public holiday meant there was a chance to go out all hours of the night on that public holiday. Now it's just an opportunity.
That was just any other day.
Now it's just an opportunity to sleep in. Nazreen, thank you for this, and happy Saint Jean-Baptiste.
You too.
That's Nazreen Abdel-Majid with What's Trending. Let's bring in Mike Ross with This Day in History, the Now of Then.
Dave, we're going back to June 24th, 1880 for our first note. And O Canada, with music by Calixte Lavallée and French lyrics by Judge A.B. Routier, was performed for the first time at the Skaters Pavilion in Quebec City. 1957, Front Page Challenge made its debut. Intended as a 13-week summer replacement program, it became North America's longest-running game interview television program of its kind. It was canceled by the CBC in 1995. And on this day in 2011, at the NHL draft in St. Paul, Minnesota, it was announced that the Winnipeg NHL franchise would once again be known as the Jets. And the organization then picked Mark Scheifele with the 7th overall pick. Those are your events and happenings this day in history.
Thank you very much for that one, Mike. That's Mike Ross. He'll be filling in for me tomorrow as I'm taking tomorrow off. But we can't look all the way ahead to tomorrow. We need to look ahead to this afternoon when Kelly and Company hits the airwaves at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Ramya Amuthan is the co-host of that show, and she joins us now. Hey, good morning, Ramya.
Good morning, Dave.
Ramya, before we get down to any kind of AMI audio business here, I need to ask you our daily poll question. What's your favorite summer drink?
Oh, do you have choices or can I just pick anything?
So on the board, we have iced tea, lemonade, iced coffee, and water, but I'm definitely encouraging people to go with other if they have a mocktail they like, a cocktail they like, or something they don't see listed there.
Yeah, okay. I can go with the Long Island iced tea. I can go with lemonade and vodka. But to be honest, if I'm having juice during the summer, it's probably going to be cranberry.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little summer cranberry juice.
Hop over and get some cane juice. That always has a summer vibe to me. I'm not really a coconut person, though. So I'm thinking of a lot of summery drinks with the coconut flavor to it, but not really my thing.
The one thing I've been harping on about all day is the flavor of peach, because peach really does make me think of summer, and I love me a peach iced tea. So yes. I'm inclined to vote iced tea on that poll, even though I think regular listeners would know that a ice cold Mill Street Organic in a glass bottle is absolutely the way that I like to go. Ramya, enough about the recreation times, although Kelly and Company is always a good time. What do you guys have coming up on the show today?
Plus, Friday's just around the corner.
So it's Friday Junior, as Corinne Van Dusen says.
That's right. So we're talking to gardener Judith Lavin today from Toronto Master Gardeners, and she's going to tell us about early summer in the garden, how we can get started, because she says it's not too late, even if it's on the balcony or container gardening. So lots of stuff to get into with her. We're previewing tonight's episode of Our Community on AMI TV, which is featuring inventor and adaptive designer Christian Begg and his company, Bowhead Corporations. Also, we're flipping through quirky stories from around the world with Jeff Ryman, and we call this What in the World?
Busy day when Jeff Ryman's on the airwaves all over the place. Ramya, have a great show, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Have a good long weekend.
Thank you very much. That's Ramya Amuthan. She is the co-host of Kelly & Company, which comes your way at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. Coming up next, Karen McGee will give you her central regional report that includes a story on a new little library in Sudbury that is sharing diverse voices and perspectives. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Let's head down the 401, not all the way to Quebec, but fairly close to Morrisburg, Ontario, for the Central Regional Report. And we're joined by AMI Content Development Specialist Karen McGee. Hey, good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Yeah, in like 20 minutes, I could be celebrating Saint Jean Baptiste Day.
I mean, you could do it. You could do it in Morrisburg. You don't need to be in Quebec to celebrate Saint Jean.
You know what? You're right. Damn it.
And you live near the river, so you could just shoot off fireworks into the river. I'm sure the Americans would not be concerned about that at all.
Yeah, and my neighbors wouldn't be concerned about it either.
Oh, nor would the dogs or the cats.
Nor the dogs. Yes, we have a lot of dogs in our street.
And so there you go. No fireworks today for Karen McGee. Karen, let's jump right into things. Let's head over to Sudbury, Ontario. Just last week, I was talking about a small pop-up library in British Columbia that was going to be putting an extra emphasis on diverse voices. And there's a little library in Sudbury that's doing the same thing. So we need to start with some basics here, though, Karen. What is a little library?
So I think this is a brilliant idea. I have spent a lot of time in libraries. It's actually my first job ever was working in a library. So I love the idea of books. Like you can never have enough books. So a little free library is a free book sharing box where anyone can take a book to share. So basically they function on the honor system. So you're walking by, and I want to say they're built like extra large birdhouses, and people can like take a book and then you just return it when you're done with it. Or if you've got some you're done with and you want to sort of put them in and let other people have them, put them in. So it's like you swap them out. You don't actually need to take a book to have a book to put in order to take one. So like just try to share a little bit, and you can find these in a lot of places. They're popping up everywhere. Our local gas station / corner store, or keeping in the Quebec thing in Williamsburg, just up the road, has one. And now there's a new one in Sudbury. So Sudbury's not just home to Letterkenny anymore.
Yeah, there you go. The great expansion of the big nickel, Sudbury, moving up in the world. So Karen, what makes this particular little library so unique?
So this little library is going to feature books that have been curated by Taryn Green. Taryn has cerebral palsy, and the works in the library are going to focus on experiences of authors who are part of the LGBTQ or biopic and disability communities. And according to CBC Sudbury, Taryn spoke with them about this. She'd want to do a library that basically focuses on children's books. That was sort of her idea when she first started thinking about doing a little library. But what changed over the last year, as she started to research about disability more and decided to learn more about it, she decided to fill it with books that she would want to read. And she decided to actually add books that are now for the LGBTQ biopic communities. The little library is now open for business on Boland Avenue in the south side of Sudbury. It's really a great idea, and you see them popping up in communities all over Canada. There's a website, Little Libraries, where you can actually type in your city and see if there's any near you.
Yeah, there's lots of diverse voices to share, and when these little libraries and other smaller community libraries put that emphasis on it, it's a really positive development. So really cool to see that popping up in Sudbury, British Columbia.
I'm always curious to see what my neighbors are going to put in, what books my neighborhood's reading, which sounds really creepy, but it's kind of interesting.
No, it really speaks to what resonates with people, right? What people around you are engaging with and what's framing them. Because let's be honest, what we read really does frame us. What we watch, what we read, what we listen to, a lot of the ethos will trickle down into our mind. So it's interesting to see what perspectives people are bringing in and what they're taking in and what they feel they want to share.
Yeah, I love it.
Karen, let's jump over to something a little closer to home. Ottawa will be losing one of their inclusive dance companies. The Dandelion Dance Company has announced they're going to be closing. So let's jump back in time here. What made Dandelion Dance so unique?
So I feel like I've talked about them before, or that we've done stories on them before, the Dandelion Dance Company. They're a not-for-profit dance company in Ottawa, and they really had a great mission. They brought girls of all backgrounds and abilities together, basically unique experiences about sharing a common theme about being female and about basically building your creativity and building your confidence. And it really allowed girls to have a voice, develop empathy, break stereotypes, and basically practice good leadership. They are a fully inclusive dance studio. They welcome girls of all income levels, religions, cultures, body types, abilities, members of the LGBTQ community, and all experience levels. And they offered classes and performances at wheelchair accessible venues to make, and they also did things, I love this one, they accommodated requests related to religious and cultural practice, such as prayer times and modest clothing for dance for classes and public performances. And they really walked the walk, or should I say dance the dance, when it came to making dance accessible. And I read nothing but positive things about them. And again, it's just sad when you see things like this close.
Yeah, so what were the factors that led to the closure of their doors?
So according to an article from the CBC, they have been able to find, and I'm going to use air quotes here, financial stability. They were not-for-profit, and although they tried to secure stable funding outside of annual grants and fundraising activities, they really didn't get any consistent, dependable support. Executive Director Monica Cohan called the decision heartbreaking and is hoping to start up a project really soon. And I like what she said. We're really hoping it's going to be a see you real soon. So this isn't a goodbye. Hopefully that they'll come up with something else that just that benefits young women and people from the Ottawa community to be able to express themselves through dance and make it accessible for everybody.
Yeah, it's something you hear a lot with many different not-for-profits or charities saying, can we just find a bit of sustainable funding as opposed to trying to hodgepodge together every week? And that means when they get that sustainable funding, it means they can really focus on their programming and expanding it to more and more people as opposed to worrying about just keeping the lights on. So definitely we wish them the best of luck as they're trying to figure those next steps out. Karen, you've already gotten engaged with us on our daily poll of the day about what's the best summertime drink. Your vote was sangria, but I need to unpack this a little bit. White wine or red wine?
Well, red wine, and there's a little story behind this. Mexicali Roses just opened up a new restaurant in Cornwall up the road. Everything's up the road from Morseburg. Up the road. So we had dinner from there a few nights ago, and people who don't know Mexicali Roses, used to be in Ottawa, was started in Ottawa, was an Ottawa institution for years. And they have, in my opinion, the second best sangria in the world. The first best is in the Mexican Pavilion in Epcot. And they had it to go. I actually asked, kind of checking me, going, I don't suppose you give sangria to go. And they gave it to me in like I got like a liter of it. And I've been having like half a cup every night.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
What are your fruits of choice in your sangria? Because there are different philosophies. Some folks like something a little more citrusy. Some folks prefer the berries.
So when I used to make it from scratch, and I will do it, like make my own simple syrup and stuff like this. By the way, don't use your boyfriend's parents' best wine to make sangria.
No.
Get you in a little bit of trouble.
No, that will get you in some trouble.
It was really good, though. I do the orange, lemon, and lime syrup. And then I always like with cherries. Who doesn't like cherries in their alcohol if you can? If you're having a fruity drink, no matter what, you need cherries, right?
See, I like this. The food and drink column with Jenny Bovard has really extended into the second hour of the show as we've moved forward here.
I don't have the fun shirt, though.
That's true. Only Jenny and I can wear the Hawaiian shirts. So, you know, we have a very exclusive club in the Hawaiian shirt town on this show. Karen, you sent an email to myself and Jeff Ryman after our sports chat today with an unverified stat, but I think we should enter the world of reckless speculation and share this reckless stat.
Okay, so I saw this on Twitter, and I haven't had time to fact check it, and I've been meaning to fact check it, but it's one of those things that's going to take like a bit of a deep dive to fact check. And apparently, and again, unverified, when Montreal and Toronto have met in the playoffs, historically, whatever team comes out of that round, Montreal or Toronto, they go on to win the cup. And I don't want to jinx it, but I thought that was very interesting. And I saw that when the series in Montreal and Toronto started to play. And I didn't think Montreal was going to come out of it, so I didn't really fact check it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'm like, dang it, I should have really put more work into that. But it's going to take a bit to fact check that one. So.
Well, it's going to take some cross-referencing. What I will say is this. The last time they met, there were 12 teams in the league, and the majority of the times that Toronto met Montreal in the playoffs, there were 6 teams in the league. So it does stand to reason if they met in the playoffs, they did not have to jump over too many hurdles to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, there's that too. So again, how reliable is that fact if you're going from a tiny base of numbers to get the information, right? So a lot of facts.
Sample size.
I take that very seriously.
Sample size, margin of error, you know, all these words the nerds use. All we know is it's going to be exciting nights for Montreal Canadiens fans in Montreal, or it's going to be extremely disappointing. And then that disappointment will stretch into Saturday, and then this will all be a moot point, and whatever validity and veracity there was to that stat will be out the window forevermore. Karen, always fun catching up. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
See you on Tuesday, Dave.
That's Karen McGee, AMI's content development specialist. She joined us from Morrisburg, Ontario. Beautiful Morrisburg, Ontario, right there on the St. Lawrence River. That's all the time we have for today on the show. Don't worry, we'll be back tomorrow, except I won't be here. Mike Ross filling in for me, looking forward to that. He'll be engaging in the news panel with Megan Gilmore and Michelle McQuigg. Then there will be a short cameo from me as I discuss a documentary film with Michael McNeely called Building a Bridge about the LGBTQ plus community and the Catholic Church. So the show starts, as usual, 9 p.m. Eastern time. P.M. Oh, gosh. 9 a.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio and AMI TV. And until then, I'm Dave Brown reminding you to play safe, play fair, but don't forget to have some fun.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.